Welcome to Problem Solve, the podcast where me and a special co-host solve all your problems really easily, probably. Hello and welcome to Problem Solved. I'm Jeff Gunther, licensed professional counselor. I'm so happy you're here. I'm talking to Dr. Karen Gurney today. She is a clinical psychologist and certified sexologist. No big deal. She just released a brand new book this week. You should go buy it right now. It's called How Not to Let Kids Ruin Your Sex Life, because they will. They always do. But if you read this book, that doesn't have to be true. And it is like, I've seen a ton, hundreds of parents who have come in and talked to me in therapy about how their sex life is now ruined because of kids. And I get it. Oh my God, the fucking bomb that goes off in your life. But Karen Gurney helps you discover how to communicate, how to invite intimacy, how to avoid key relationship pitfalls, and how to survive the chaos and pressures of family life and sleep deprivation at every single stage. You're going to listen to this podcast I did with her, and she's going to answer all these like sexy questions with me. And every time she gives an answer, you're going to be like, I didn't fucking think about it that way. That's a really good way to look at it. And what amazing practical advice. I can implement that right now. I swear to God, she is one of the most refreshing sexologists I've ever talked to. Highly recommend. And all the little tips that she gives in this podcast, she gives so many more in her book. I love her book. It was just released last week. You need to get it. Anyways, if you want more of me, you can go listen to my other podcast called Big Dating Energy. You're spoiled by all my podcasts. You're welcome. You know what would just like really boost my mood and improve my day? For it, this works for like 24 hours. My mood is boosted so high when you give me a review. Just review this podcast. I read all my reviews and I take them to heart, and I love to see your 5 stars. Please, please, please do that. I'm begging you to do that. Okay. Anyways, no big deal. Now we're going to start the podcast. Okay. Here we go. This is a podcast where we explore the intricate world of relationships and navigate the complexity of mental health together. I am Jeff Gunther, a licensed therapist, but in this space, I'm your host, not your personal therapist or the therapist for our guests. This show offers a platform for open conversations about relationship and mental health challenges, providing insights and perspectives for educational and entertainment purposes only. It's crucial to remember that our discussions do not replace professional therapy or constitute a therapist-client relationship between myself, our callers, or you, our listeners. If you're dealing with personal struggles or seeking support, I urge you to consult with a qualified professional who can provide the personalized care you deserve. Thank you for being here. Let's dive in. Hello, Dr. Karen Gurney. How are you?
I am wonderful, Jeff. How are you?
I'm really good. Yeah, I'm really happy that you're here with me today. We're going to try to solve some problems and listen to some questions that people have sent in to me. And I'm really excited to chat with you. I've seen you on other podcasts. I've always been incredibly impressed with your work and how you answer questions. So I'm kind of flattered that you're here with me today.
Ditto, ditto. I'm so excited to be here. I'm mega excited. I'm a big fan.
Good. Yeah, we're both big fans.
Mutual love.
Exactly. All right, let's dive in. Andrea, go ahead and play our first question for us.
So I'm going to have two questions. My first one was, I was dating someone for a little while and they had not the best oral hygiene. And it was something like, I loved this person. So it was really hard for me to kind of try to tell them like, I didn't really want to do stuff with them when I felt like their teeth were dirty or I felt like their breath was bad because I didn't want to hurt their feelings. So I guess my question is like, when you're in a case like that where you love someone so much, but you feel like they have this hygienic issue or this kind of thing that's turning you off, how do you navigate that? And how do you kind of politely tell them that there's something about them or like there's a habit that you don't enjoy? And then my other question is, so we had very different libidos, the guy I was dating, and I actually had a higher libido than him. And it was very hard for me, especially once we got into a year into our relationship, to kind of ask for what I needed and ask to have that sexy time or that intimacy and kind of get him excited about it. And so I guess my question is, when things start to fizzle out a little bit and you kind of get out of that quote unquote honeymoon phase, how do you kind of navigate and bridge that gap of not feeling too needy or not feeling like you're asking for too much when it's very clear that someone isn't as, like, you know, I don't want to say sexually interested, but isn't as, you know, like off, like doesn't need sex as frequently as you. How do you kind of bridge that or fix that or, you know, just communicate about that?
Okay. So these are two questions that are from the same person, but I hear a ton about, and the first part, the hygiene question, also I think kind of like connects to just sort of like a wider, broader question of just like, how do you ask somebody to change something about their body or how they're performing sexually or what they're doing in a way that doesn't feel like shaming or doesn't feel like they're going to like take it really hard or personally. It's a real, like, there's so much vulnerability when you're like doing sexy stuff together. So I can totally understand wanting to be incredibly careful. So with that first question, where would you start?
And like you, I can hear the fact that both of these are around communication and how do you talk about things that are difficult. And actually, the other thing that I hear that's a thread across both is that both of these things are about protecting the relationship or for the good of the relationship. So there is an intention behind both of them of, I really think this matters, and therefore I want to have this conversation, even though it's hard. And I think that's worth acknowledging as well. The first one is tough, right? This is something which comes up quite a lot. It's a really tricky one, because I think if we all kind of reflect inside ourselves, this is something that we'd probably want to know if there was something like that that was affecting our partner's sexual interest in us, something that was perhaps easy to change. Not everything is easy to change.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I guess one of my questions for this person would be, if you turned the tables around, would this be something you would like to know yourself?
Yeah, I think that's a good, is this something you'd want to know yourself? Is it changeable? Right? Or, because I guess then you kind of get into this place of, can this actually be changed? If it can't, then can you accept it? Can you accept it in a way where, like, you can appreciate it or find it endearing? I'm not sure. Maybe not the hygiene part. But, you know, sometimes we love the stink of our partner.
Sometimes.
sometimes that's a thing. But in other ways, like, can you accept it? Can you ignore it? Can you embrace it? These are like really tricky questions. But with hygiene, it seems like something that you really can do something about. So how do you think she should like approach that? What should she actually say?
I think a conversation that starts with, you know, these are some of the things that really get me going sexually, that really make me feel like sex. These are some of the things that get in the way for me. It gets in the way for me, perhaps, if I don't feel as though I've, had a shower. For some people, that really matters. For some people, it really doesn't, that they feel clean in their body. If I've brushed my teeth, you know, I sometimes feel the same way if perhaps I feel that you haven't had a shower or brushed your teeth. And it really helps me get in the zone if I feel that you're taking care of those things. That might be a kind of sensitive place to start.
Yeah, I like that. Kind of leaning into a conversation about, like, do you know what turns me on? When we're feeling like really fresh and clean, we just jumped out of the shower, you know, and like minty fresh breath. I love it. So you might not be like incredibly direct about it, but you're definitely sending a message.
Exactly.
And hopefully they pick up on it pretty easily. If not, then you might have to go and be like really straightforward about what's getting in the way.
Yeah. And I think with something like hygiene, going back to your point about this earlier, I think it is a reasonable thing to ask for. It's changeable, and I think it's reasonable. Because it is something most of the time people can do something about. But it's also something that maybe sometimes people don't notice about themselves. So it might be something they would really want to know.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think it's a good idea to, like, before like you, before you really kind of like start having a really sexy relationship with somebody, do you think it's a good idea to kind of like ask them, how do you want me to give you feedback? If there's something that's getting in the way, like some people want you to be really direct. Other people want you to like be handled with kid gloves. Sometimes you want to just sort of like be passive about it. I imagine that would be a good conversation.
I think it's a great question to have. Yeah. I think I'm all for creating cultures of easy communication. I think it's a real win-win in all kinds of relationships. I think the more you can talk about talking, the better generally things go. So, I mean, absolutely, it would be great if people did that. And I suppose that leads us on to the second part of the question, which is really communication about frequency of sex. And it's probably worth saying at this point that discrepancies in the amount that people want to have sex together should be considered the norm. It's not unusual. It's the norm. And
it is the norm, but I think that we all fool ourselves into thinking that maybe this is how it's going to be forever during the honeymoon period. If there's like, if we're having sex or the experiencing the same amount of desire, it's just like, well, I found my match, and we like pretend like it's not ever going to change, but it typically does change, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And perhaps we'll come on to future questions and talk about how it changes shortly. And for this person, it's really a question of, what if I want it more than them? How do I raise that? How do I initiate it? How do I communicate it? And I think it's worth considering that this is something that will crop up for all of us at some point if we're having sexual relationships with other people, which is that we're always having to put ourselves out there and take a risk a little bit with our communication. And there's always a good chance that the other person will say, not right now, thanks. And I think what this person is trying to communicate is she doesn't want to come across as, did she say needy? Was that the word you picked up?
Yeah.
And I suppose sometimes it's worth noticing that a pattern can creep in when people are having sex together, where the person who's initiating more starts to feel as though they're pestering or needy. And it might be worth having a conversation together about, how do we want sex to feature in our relationship? Like, what do we want our sex life to look like over the next couple of months, over the next couple of years, weeks, whatever it is? What do we want it to look like? What matters to us about how often we do it? Does how often we do it actually matter? Usually it doesn't, disclaimer. But for this person, there's something quite tricky for her about getting it started, because she feels as though she's putting her needs above her partner's.
She does. And it seems like she feels guilty about that or weird about that. Like, that's not okay. It also reminds me, I don't know, I'm interested in like how you, what you think about this, but from when I talk to folks, when I talk to people in relationships, and one of them usually always has the higher desire and the other one has lower desire, the higher desire partner sometimes can start like resenting the lower desire partner, because it feels like the lower desire partner, they get to choose when sex happens. Like, the higher desire one is just like, I'm always horny, I always want to do it. And but you get to always make the decision. And there's like this like anger, frustration, resentment that develops. I don't get the sense that that's really coming through in the question, but it's the, I worry that that could happen with these
That
folks.
Could happen, yeah. And I think similar to that dynamic you've just mentioned, I think the person who feels that they've got lower desire often feels guilt and pressure, and as though they're always having to be the one that says no. One of the things I notice in my work is that the system of the relationship between two people, whether that's casual or something more long-term and committed, there can be a sense of the system pushing each people almost to caricature levels of their position in it. So it seems to the lower desire person that the higher desire person is always up for it. And actually, the higher desire person might even say that, oh, I can be ready anytime, I'm always good to go, you just say the word. It's not actually true. but it feels that way to both of them. And to the higher desire person, it feels like the lower desire person just never thinks about sex or never wants it. Mm-hmm. So there's something to do with the fact that that dynamic pushes them both into a polarized position, which then keeps the system going. Mm-hmm. So I think it's quite useful to take a step back from frequency and to think instead about the function that sex serves for these people. What is it when they want sex that they actually want? Are they wanting to relieve some sense of physical desire, of arousal, of horniness? You know, are they wanting physical pleasure and orgasm? Or are they wanting something else, which, by the way, from sex science, we know is much more likely, like to feel connected, like adventure, like to lose themselves, like stress relief, like to feel that they're kind of connecting on a different level? What is it that they want to get in that moment in time? And I think it can be quite useful to get into the habit of understanding that about each other. What typically are the things for this person who's left this question? When she's wanting to be sexual, what is it that she's wanting that for? And is that something that she can communicate to her partner? You know, I'm really feeling like I want to feel alive tonight. I want to feel alive with you, and this is what I'd like to do. And what does that need to look like, that feeling alive? And is that something that when her partner hears the reasons for it, can actually quite get on board with, either through sex or actually through something else instead? Because if people want it for connection, there's other ways to connect. If people want to feel alive, there's other things that they can do together. If it's about passion, there are other ways you can demonstrate passion without the act of sex. And in my experience, that sometimes loosens things up a little bit, because the lower desire partner can perhaps get it in their mind that this is about scratching a physical itch for their partner. And that can feel quite irritating, actually, that you want this thing from me and you're always wanting this thing and it's never enough. But actually understanding the reason for that psychologically, both for the individual or perhaps for the function of that relationship, can be a really good way to think, well, how else can we get on board with this, either instead of it or in a sexy kind of way that feels okay for me?
Yeah. Oof. I love that. You're asking folks to kind of dig deep here a little bit, at least go under the surface, which I think, you know, I have faith that obviously that my listeners can easily do that.
Of course they can.
They love this sort of stuff, but it's really tricky, because when you go underneath the surface, it could be all these things. You want passion, you want excitement, you want to feel alive, you want to feel connected, you want to feel like my partner is attracted to me, I'm desired, I'm loved, we're having adventures. Like, there's all those things, but there's also, like, you know, the vulnerability of, like, I'm feeling unloved, I'm feeling like you don't care about me, I'm not feeling taken care of, you know. And then it's hard to express those in a really vulnerable way, and so sex can kind of like act as like this huge package that feels like it can provide all of those things: excitement, passion, adventure, whatever, connection. And you don't have to be like super identified with like the underlying feeling. And so it just feels like it would just sort of solve everything if you just fuck me, right? But that's not really addressing what's actually going on.
No.
And long term, it's such better communication if we can dig a little deeper.
Absolutely. And, you know, sex is something which, for people who enjoy being in sexual relationships, and that's the way they're inclined, it's something which is usually in reach. But for many of us, sometimes it's out of reach. Sex with another person, or perhaps because something's going on with our body or something's happening in our lives. And at those times, it's quite useful to know what then isn't met for you psychologically or in your relationships. Because If we can understand that about ourselves, then quite often there are other ways that we can meet that need. I mean, we all know we can scratch the physical itch on our own. Yeah. So we don't have to rely on someone else usually for that. But in terms of the other needs, I would say to those listeners that feel nervous communicating that to someone else, maybe it's just useful to understand that for yourself. Like, look back at the, you know, the last couple of days or weeks or months or years or whenever. Think back to the times when you felt prompted to be sexual with someone else. What was it that came before the sex? What was it that you felt that you needed more of? Why did you do it? And try and look if there's any commonalities in those reasons and have a think about the reasons that show up most for you. And that might tell you quite a lot about how sex functions in your life. And you don't have to share it with anyone else if you don't feel you want to.
No, yeah, you don't have to. And there's something sort of liberating or freeing about having that information. Now you don't have to like funnel everything into sex. It can be sex and then 10 other things that will be able to like provide you with that feeling or emotion or connection that you're seeking.
Absolutely. So. I work with a lot of new parents, and it's quite common for people to say, my partner always wants sex and this feels really insensitive to me. You know, I'm not getting any sleep, et cetera, et cetera. And it's quite liberating to hear a partner say, actually, I just want to feel attractive in your eyes. And the only way I feel that is when we have sex, because all of a sudden, all of these different options other than having sex come up as solutions. So I think it can be quite revelatory.
There's something, you know, when you're like having sex, it sometimes can feel like this like carnal desire, this like other part of you that you get to express that you don't get to express in any other part of your life or relationship. Like it comes out and your partner or your partners are responding to it and their carnal things coming out, you know, and you get to like really, I love that. Like that's such a fun, great part of sex. But are you sort of asking people to like see if they can experience that, whatever they get out of that, in ways that don't have to be like, you don't have to be like naked in the bedroom doing
sexy
stuff?
They can do if they want to, and that can be useful to know about themselves. There's nothing wrong with getting everything you need from sex. But what if you find that actually one of the things you feel when you're in that carnal place is that it's the only part of your day where you really lose yourself in the present moment? And a lot of people feel that in sex, and that's one of the wonderful things about sex. Then that tells you something, right? That actually it's great to lose yourself, and the rest of the week your mind is going 10 to the dozen. And so, yeah, great, get that from sex. But also when you feel that need and you say to your partner, I really want to have sex. Is it that you really want to have sex? Yes, of course it is. But also, is it that you just want to lose yourself a little bit? And maybe there's other ways.
Yeah, there's other ways. Before we started this podcast, I let you know that I was like getting over being sick. I was sick, like real sick for like 2 or 3 days. And it was that kind of sickness where I was just like, I'm so sick that I cannot do anything. I'm not like, I'm allowed to not be productive because I just can't like have the energy. I'm blowing my nose way too much or something. And like, it felt like freedom from capitalism, right? From productivity, from my schedule that I've set for myself. And it felt similar to the feeling I have during sex, one of the feelings I have during sex, where I'm just like, I'm fucking, and that's all I'm thinking about. I'm not thinking about creating content or what's going to be on a podcast or doing taxes. And I was like, oh, this is like, if I could also just give myself breaks during the week instead of like experiencing mostly through sex, right? So yeah, I'm resonating with what you're saying.
And the other point that you made about expressing different sides of our identity, I think that's a really big one as well. You know, think about when you're understanding this about yourself, what is it that you like to feel during sex? How do you like to feel about yourself? And when else do you feel that thing about yourself? You know, do you want to feel powerful? Do you want to feel completely submissive? Like, what is it that that during sex feels quite intoxicating for you. And, you know, this isn't about not having sex and finding other ways to meet that need. That's not it. But inevitably, there's always going to be a time when we feel driven to be sexual and our partner doesn't, or for whatever reason, life means sex is off the cards. So it's kind of useful to know what makes me tick sexually and are there other ways, as well as sex, that I can get those needs met for myself.
Yeah, you can meet them for yourself. It also takes the pressure off of the partner to like, you have to give me sex or I need it in order to feel all these feelings. Like, yeah. Okay. I feel like the whole podcast episode could be about this, but we're going to go to the next question. Andrea, go ahead and play the second question for us.
Hi, thank you for listening. I'm a gay guy. I've been married for 8 years now. My partner can only top me. I've always considered myself versatile. I was not good at communicating this or to ask for my needs to be met. This led me to have an affair last year, and this ended up opening up difficult conversations. I asked for an open marriage then, and I haven't gotten it, and I've been waiting since, and I'm just getting too tired of waiting, and I don't know if leaving a marriage just because of sexual incompatibility is something that can be done. And it's not only the compatibility, it's also the fact that we've never been very sexual. And at first, that wasn't a big deal for me, but it's become one over the years.
Do you feel, is like the shame palpable or the guilt? Like, do you feel that coming through the caller?
I do. And I would say that the thing that stands out for me, and I hear this all the time, given my job and the types of work that I do with clients, is it okay for sex to be the issue that causes the end of a relationship? And this is something that people feel an awful amount of guilt about, almost as though sex is so frivolous that I should just be happy with what I've got and it shouldn't be a reason to end a relationship. And the first thing that I would say for anyone that's listening that feels that they're really unhappy with the sex life that they've got is that, of course, it matters. Sexual satisfaction for people who enjoy sexual relationships, it matters for relationship satisfaction. It matters for psychological well-being. It actually is fairly important in terms of our quality of life for people who are that way inclined. And so for this person, I really, really feel for this person because what I'm hearing is a very common issue. And I imagine there's a lot of people listening that are in the same position, which is we've become typecast in our sexual roles. And there's very little fluidity in who I can be sexually, in what I can ask for sexually. That's led to boredom. That's led to perhaps in monogamous relationships, infidelity. And now we're at crisis point and we can't talk about it. Such a common issue.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like there's also the feeling that like, because he didn't speak up at the beginning, letting his partner know what he wanted, well, now he can't speak up again. Like, too bad. Like, he's like locked into this, right?
That window is closed. Yeah.
No, that window is closed. You
know, something I often say is that it's really important that our sexual relationships, if we're going to have sex with the same person for a long time, that they allow space for growth and flex. Because you and I, Jeff, we're not the same people that we were sexually 10 years ago, and we won't be the same people sexually in 10 years from now. And so if you're going to have the same partner or partners over that time period, you have to allow growth and flex because your body's going to change, your preferences are going to change, your sexuality might change. The things that you're into might change, the things that you want to try. And we have to be able to support a relationship culture that allows room for growth and flex. I don't think all is lost here by any stretch.
Good. Do you? I love your positive, optimistic attitude. I don't, but I'm also getting like a little triggered just because like I like have been in a similar relationship. And so I feel like I'm feeling like the pain where I started out a relationship where I was like, I like sex and sex compatibility or the amount of sex we have is low on like what I need or want in a relationship. And then years later, I changed and I was like, ooh, it's a top three, when before it was like, you know, not even a top 10, right? And then I was like, well, if I leave this relationship, well, you know, I'm going to ask for what I want, but I'm not getting what I want. And she was like, babe, this was false advertising, you know, like at the beginning of the relationship, you didn't care about this. And now all of a sudden you're caring about it. Like, and also not only that, but like, I can't and don't want to meet those needs, you know? So then I'm just like, oh, I'm the asshole here. Right. Because like, I'm the one that wants something different, even though I wasn't saying, and I was being authentic when I first got together with her and I was being authentic later in the relationship.
Of course. And so it felt like growth and flex.
I had to make the sacrifice. And, you know, in my relationship and maybe in this guy's relationship too, there was like so much good. It wasn't, you know, there's like, you know, sense of humor and connection. We felt grounded together and yada, yada. There's like so many wonderful things. And I think that like, you know, like we're talking about, there's growth and there's evolution and there's change that happens individually. And you actually have to be like quite lucky to change in your own individual ways and still be really compatible. It doesn't mean that like the relationship is going to end if you change in different ways. Like you can still be together and be happy and everything. But like you're saying, we have to leave space for this to happen because it's going to happen to some degree.
We do. And I think it's important that we look at what underpins this idea that we should stay sexually compatible with somebody for a long period of time. And it's the illusion of monogamy as a concept that humans should be aligned with. And we know that there isn't really any research to back that up, right? So if we're going to be monogamous or if we're going to have many partners who we keep for a long time, we have to assume that we're going to have differences in what we want to do sexually. And we have to be able to navigate those. How do we do that? Only with talking. And we'll come on to how we do that maybe in a second. But I like to think of it as kind of Venn diagrams, and that our sexuality for us as individuals exists outside of our relationships. And there is a bit of overlap with our relationship, but there should be ways in which we can have our different sexual interests and find ways to meet those needs, whether that's through solo sex or if we're in more open relationships with other people, whether it's through fantasy. There's lots of ways we can explore our sexuality outside of the person we're with. But if we're in a monogamous relationship, we have to look for that overlap. And at times that overlap will feel greater and at times it will feel smaller. And I think it's perfectly acceptable to say, it's not enough for me. It was, but it's now not. And that's an acceptable reason to move on. But I think it's quite useful before you do that to say, hey, this is what I'd like. Mm-hmm. Can we do that? And that's where this listener, that's the situation that they're in, isn't it? Which is, this listener just wants to have a conversation and say, you know what? This won't be enough for me if we can't look at what we're doing sexually and make some changes. And that's not an easy conversation to have because we're all socialized out of talking about sex. But it sounds like there's lots of good about this relationship and it's worth giving that a go.
I think so. And, you know, he says that he asked for an open relation or open marriage, but I imagine that he like asked it once in a really squeamish way, and then he never asked it again. Now he's just waiting, you know, for his partner to come around. And it's a conversation that you're gonna have to have that conversation a lot if you want to like change the relationship dynamic and open things up. The underpinning, it seems like what we're saying, is that like he feels like he doesn't like he's not allowed to ask that, or he doesn't deserve to ask for that, or it's not okay to like prioritize sex such a major part of a relationship. And we're trying to like give him permission to start that conversation again.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, what you were saying about the conversation they had about the open relationship, you know, open relationship structures are a very valid and healthy way of doing relationships for people who want to do it. But at the same time, you wonder whether this conversation for them has come up out of infidelity, out of stress around their sex life. And so perhaps it holds a different meaning to the partner. Perhaps what it means to the partner is, I'm not satisfied and this is dangerous for us, rather than, hey, we have great sex, but I'd love to have great sex with other people as well, which is a very different kind of conversation. So maybe that's why the partner's avoiding it.
Oh, for sure. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we have no idea about like the infidelity and how that happened or how it affected the relationship or if it was talked about or healed or not or whatever. So there's a lot going on here.
There's a lot.
But yeah. Okay. All right. Let's move on to the next question. I feel like each question is leading to like really lots of good conversations that could go on forever, but
indeed,
try to stay on.
Let's rein it in.
Yeah. Okay. Andrea, go ahead and play the third question.
Hi, Jeff. My question is about what to do when you've been in a relationship for a really long time. I was married for 8 years at the time, and I had really no interest in satisfying myself or my husband. I had completely sort of switched off from that part of myself completely. And I think it was because he and I had disconnected. So what sort of advice can you give to people who are invested in a long-term relationship, but their sexual energy is really dwindled? And what can you do to kind of rekindle that?
Oh, this is the question. So this is what you were referring to earlier, wasn't it, when you were talking about the honeymoon period as well. So this is the perfect question to bring that one back up. So I think it's important at this stage to say what we know about desire and how desire works from sex research, and the fact that it's very different than how people understand desire to work, because of what we see on TV and what we're sold really about sex. So it's really normal for desire to feel out of the blue at the start of a relationship and to feel like you want sex a lot. And sometimes we call this spontaneous desire, as you know, but it's also really normal. In fact, it's common and should be considered to be expected for around about a year to 18 months in for this to drop off, and for desire to feel harder to hold on to. And this happens more, but certainly isn't the case that it's exclusively for cis women rather than for cis men. Happens for cis men too, but it happens more commonly for cis women. So nurturing this desire and kickstarting this desire becomes the task in hand. But the problem is, most of us are socialized to have an idea that we should just feel like sex out of the blue. And so people sit around and wait to feel horny. And what happens is that never happens. And the less we have sex, the less we feel like sex. So before we know it, like this person, you start to feel as though, well, sex is just not something that you ever do. It's not on your mind. You're not into solo sex. You never think to have it. And people start to feel broken and that there's a problem with them. And it's just not the case. It's just how desire works.
Is there something, do you feel like there's something just sort of inherently unsexy about like a safe, secure relationship?
I think in some ways, yes. So I often talk about how, you know, at the beginning of relationship, we often associate that person just with sheer kind of sexiness. That's right. That's the role they play in our lives, right? They're not the person that takes the bins out. They're not the person we share a bank account with. They're not the person that has to pick up the milk on the way home or forgets to, or drops their kind of underpants on the floor or whatever. So the more established we get, the more our role as sexual partners gets diluted. And there are other ways we relate to each other: best friend, housemate, co-parent, pet parent. These are all different roles that we have together. And our brains just don't code them as hottie as much as they might have done at the beginning, you know? Yeah. There's also something about familiarity, that the longer we're with someone, the less that they're a novel stimulus to us in a sexual sense. And we know that our brains tend to like novel things. our interest, mm-hmm. our attention is piqued by those things. So if we're going to have sex with the same person for a long time, we need to find ways to keep seeing each other as sexual, mm-hmm. and to find ways to bring in novelty. And, you know, I don't necessarily mean latex, although if latex is your thing, then go for it.
Sure. Exactly. The problem is that, like, it then starts to feel like work, right? And that goes into the, like, well, this doesn't feel spontaneous, and Hollywood tells me that it should always be spontaneous, or then it doesn't really count, or it's not real. And then, like, putting work into your sexual relationship, that feels like they shouldn't go together for some people sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. But it can be like really fun work, I guess. Maybe we shouldn't even call it work, that you can like do with your partner that can like really spice things up. And so what kind of like practical tips can you give this person?
You're trying to avoid the word work, aren't you? I mean, you know, you're absolutely right that we're sold an idea of spontaneity and high passion and lust. You know, in fact, I was just having this conversation with a couple I was seeing this morning, and we were talking about the fact that you don't ever see representations of sex in long-term relationships happening on TV in the way they actually happen in real life. And if you did, it would be much more like someone has the idea, I'm not really feeling horny, but it'd be quite nice to have sex because it's been a while and it's much more fun than watching Netflix. But I need to find a way to communicate that. And the other, they communicate it and the other person's like, oh, I wasn't in that zone at all, but maybe I can get in that headspace. And then they start fooling around a bit, and then eventually desire kicks in. That is a much more common representation of kickstarting desire in a long-term relationship, but we just don't see it represented. So you're quite right. People are starting from a place of feeling that there's something wrong with them and their relationships if they need to work at it. Mm-hmm. However, it's normal. And I think that's important to say. Anyone's listening thinking, I never feel like sex out of the blue in my long-term relationship, guess what? It's entirely normal. And you can have desire feature as much as you want in your relationship by knowing that desire is nurtured really easy. All it takes is what I call sexual currency. So lots of sexual charge between you. Maybe we can talk about what that looks like in a minute. Mm-hmm. And a kind of openness to having lots of that without pressure for it to go anywhere. So I don't know about you, but I feel like my life's quite busy. Mm-hmm. And quite often when we feel quite busy, our relationships or the person we're having sex with, the time we spend with them takes a hit. Mm-hmm. So perhaps we do spend time with them, but the time we spend with them, we're actually distracted, scrolling, watching TV. There's often little time for real emotional or physical connection. And with kickstarting desire, it's the physical connection that actually really matters. So this person talked about feeling disconnected, actually. She talked about feeling that emotional distance. And it's important to say that for most people, but not everyone, emotional connection is a foundation to being open to the idea of kickstarting desire. So if you're not feeling emotionally connected, that is a good place to start. Mm-hmm. But physical intimacy is an absolute prerequisite. So you have to find ways of organically being physical together, having that sexual currency and turning that right up. So whether that's reinstating passionate kissing, whether that's finding time to be naked together, whether that's about having showers together, whether it's about massages, it's different for everyone, right? What mm-hmm. works for them. But without that, it's very unlikely that you're going to kickstart desire, because our brains are quite primitive and they see that nakedness or they feel that touch as sexual stimuli. That's the thing that triggers arousal and desire. So without it, you're going to be sat waiting for desire for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm. Is it, but you're saying that like it's best to do those things without the goal of having sex. Like we're just experiencing pleasure, touching each other's bodies, feeling what it feels like to have our skin touching. And that's it. We're like in the moment experiencing this. If sex happens, cool. If not, then it's just a pleasurable experience. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. So I often say that where we go wrong with our sex lives is often that we have a culture of low sexual currency. So we're not relating to each other as sexually at all throughout the week or month, right? It's all put the bins out and have you bought the milk? And then high stakes when someone initiates. So it feels like it really matters. There's tons of pressure riding on it. Pressure is a massive desire killer. Everyone feels awkward and perhaps it doesn't go well. What we actually want is the other way around. We want high levels of sexual currency. So relating to each other like we did at the beginning, the flirting, the texts, the eye gazing, that you look super hot in that Radiohead t-shirt, the, you know, all of that stuff, right? The spending time being naked together, you know, maybe we used to hang out in bed on a Sunday morning and just have coffee and touch each other's bodies. Maybe we don't do that anymore. So lots of that and really low pressure for it to go anywhere, because that is the circumstance where desire emerges. Those types of conditions are where desire emerges. But the problem with long-term relationships is often that that sexual currency dwindles. And I'm sure if people listening who are in longer term relationships reflect on that, they can probably look at where they're at the moment and say, actually, when do we flirt? Do our texts, if I scroll back through our texts, do I see anything remotely sexual in there, or is it all quite functional? You know, do we passionately kiss anymore at any time other than when someone's initiating sex or during sex? And if it's yes to all those things, then sexual currency needs to be looked at.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times, sometimes the response that I get back from couples or from individuals I'm seeing when we're talking about this, like, how can we like up this sexual currency? Is they're like, well, I'm going to get rejected anyways. I've been rejected a million times. And then they hand me the receipts of all the times that they've been rejected. Like, see all these, I text and I get nothing. Da, 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 da. So it's like, why would I even put myself out there anymore? And so then you have to kind of, lots of times we'll like explore the hurt and the pain and the sadness, and hopefully their partner is there and they can like understand what happened and how like they contributed to the rejection that they're feeling. And that's where maybe like the emotional connection needs to be nurtured a little bit more. There's so like, I think what you're saying is like, yes, 100%. And also there needs to be some sort of like, you know, emotional safety or some sort of like something that feels like you can express yourself in this way and that will either be received, or if it's not received, it's still, you're kindly rejected in like a loving way, right?
Yeah,
it's important.
There's got to be a sense between both of those people, if there's two people in this relationship, that sex is something that's important to them and why. So the first place I always start with couples that I'm working with is say, you know, why does it matter? Why does sex matter for you? And they both need to hear the other one say why it matters, because often one person is left feeling like it only matters to them. If it doesn't matter to the other person, then we've got a different kind of problem. And then working on sexual currency is never going to work. But if they both feel like it matters, but they find they've got into a very binary position of one of them holding desire and always reminding the other one, always rejecting and feeling guilty, the best solution for that in the short term is to take the absolute pressure off sex and dial up sexual currency off the scale with zero pressure for it to go anywhere. Because when they both get to feel what that's like without any pressure, when they feel free to grab each other, push the other person against the wall and passionately kiss them, and they can both enjoy that kiss for what it is. Those are the moments that desire flourishes. But often that fear of being constantly rejected that you talked about means they don't ever do that in the first place. So they're holding on to the times when it hasn't worked. But that high stakes thing I was talking about earlier, quite often I notice that when people are feeling like they're going to get rejected, they save their initiation until a time that it really matters. And then it's really high stakes. So then they really do remember if the other person turned them down. But what you actually need is lots of inviting in with low pressure. So really low stakes.
Yeah, something that feels really playful and sweet. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I get it. Okay, we'll have to stop here with this question, but we'll do one more question.
Okay, I have been with my husband for almost 12 years, just about half of those married. And over the last year or so, our intimacy and sex life has really waned. He assures me he is still attracted to me and wants to have sex with me, but rarely ever instigates. I've used my words, asked for what I want, defined what kind of intimacies I see are missing, explained how always having to initiate makes me feel kind of like I'm begging, but nothing seems to change. I know we're not going to be like we were when we first started dating, because who can live like that, as fun as it was? But this lifestyle really isn't doing it for me either. So any help, I'd really appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah, so this is about initiation. And it sounds like she's, you know, trying to at least like express her needs and what she wants. She's not getting what she needs. Do you think that you would like also lean into like the sexual currency conversation with this couple?
Yeah, I'm sure we would. But you know what I'm interested in starting with is she said they've been together 12 years and they've had a good sex life, but in the last year it's changed. Did you hear that too? And so I'm wondering what's going on for him. And whether there is something going on for him, whether maybe he's feeling quite low, whether there's something going on physically for him. You know, our interest in sex does wax and wane for all of us, people of all genders, over the course of our life. But if it feels quite uncharacteristic and it's a sudden change after 12 years, it might be worth figuring out if there's something else going on that he's not perhaps talking about, doesn't feel comfortable to say. We don't know his age, you know, is there something going on in terms of his confidence with erections? Is there something happening? So I'd go there first. But I agree with you. This is a question of initiation. And it sounds like she's being quite clear that a sexual relationship is important to her. We don't know if it is for him. We're assuming it is, but I think that's a good question to ask. And she's communicating that she wants to have more sex. But I'm left wondering about his confidence in initiation. Like, does he feel confident about getting it started? Is that something which is challenging for him? Perhaps he's lost his confidence with that, or they've got a bit bored with how they're doing it. And actually, they both would like something quite different with how sex gets started.
Yeah. I mean, that's, those are all really good questions. It reminds me of, for some reason, when I like open up these podcasts to sexy questions, there's always a handful of people of like women, middle-aged women that are married to men, middle-aged men who are just like, what happened to my middle-aged man husband? Like all of a sudden it's not, we're not having sex. It's like dropped off the table. I'm the one that's like trying to initiate. And this feels really backwards because it should be quote unquote, like the man always, if you want to just like play gender roles for a little bit. And it does get me there. You know, we have no idea what the hell is going on, but as like, as you get older, if you have a penis, like the penis starts to like do different stuff, react differently, and maybe not get as like hard or erect or, and it's a whole, and you know, I think there's like, as a penis haver myself, I, a lot of times hate having it because there's so much pressure. Like it feels like sex isn't going to happen unless I get hard. And if it's not hard, you're going to be disappointed. I'm going to feel so much shame. I'm going to feel like I'm letting you down. I'm worried that you feel like I'm not attracted to you. I am, but like, I hate my body right now. It is so fucking annoying. I go like inside of myself and I want to hide. I don't want to talk about this. Right. And I'm therapy, Jeff. I love to fucking talk, but even me, like, I just like, get out of here. I want to crawl out of my body and I'm resentful of my dick. And it takes like a lot of courage and emotional intelligence and vulnerability to talk to my partner about how frustrated I am and how much pressure I'm putting on myself from myself or from society or from TV or wherever the fuck it's coming from. And I don't think that a lot of men have the skills to like have this very difficult conversation about their bodies getting yeah. older and their penises behaving or acting, reacting differently. And I totally get why these women in these marriages are just like, I have no idea what's going on, because they don't have this information, and the mm-hmm. guys are shutting down. This isn't happening. This isn't the case for every single situation, but it's not talked about a lot, I think.
I agree. And I think that both of these things could be happening in this scenario, as you mentioned. So I think there is a possibility that there've been some physical changes for him, whether that's just that he needs a bit more to get turned right. on than he did before, or that he just feels like sex less than he did before. And they could just be normal changes that are happening with age, and we don't know his age. But at the same time, as you mentioned, we often see a change with women in their sexual confidence and in their ability to experience sexual pleasure in a positive way as they age. So we know that as women age, they tend to kind of free themselves of the shackles of kind of body negativity, of not feeling assertive, of not being able to access their own pleasure. And that as they age, they tend to be a bit like, well, now is my time. Like, I want all the sex now. I want to try all the new things. And if they find themselves in a relationship with someone who may have felt that way in their teens or 20s, but now is a bit take it or leave it about sex, there's that growth and flex that we talked about, and the need to be able to understand where the bottom line is for each other and see whether a compromise is possible. But I think you're quite right. There could be something else going on for him, as well as those kind of just normal shifts of aging and sexuality, which may be more about physical functioning. And mm-hmm. I think it's common for men, particularly older men, to have a sense of, well, actually, I just don't want to talk about this. So I'll just pretend that I don't want it, because mm-hmm. you're going to equate my hard penis with being interested in you. And mm-hmm. it's true that women do that. They mm-hmm. do it a lot, and they talk mm-hmm. about it a lot in therapy. You know, he's mm-hmm. how are we supposed to have sex? Sex is much more than his penis. You know, sex doesn't require a hard penis. It's just we've been sold the idea that it does. Mm-hmm. So I think they need to talk, and I wonder whether they need to talk about what's been working well with sex mm-hmm. and also what they'd like to be different moving forward. So I would avoid the not what's not working conversation, and instead I would just think about, let's just sit down and talk about, when it goes well, what are we really loving about it? Good place mm-hmm. to start. And where would we like to see it moving to? And for this particular couple, I can see that one of the useful conversations is, we'd like to find ways to get it started that work for us both. I mean, maybe there's other things we're going to find out about him. Mm-hmm. But I've got a big hunch this could be about initiation and his lack of confidence knowing how to get it started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it can be a lot of fun to have a conversation about what turns you on. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of like really good information you can collect from that conversation. Mm-hmm. But I also understand that it feels maybe a little loaded at this time, because you feel like you've been trying to initiate that conversation for a while and you're not getting much and you're confused and frustrated. But, you know, like you're saying, like we're saying throughout this entire episode, a lot of this comes down to talking, which is a total bummer, because talking sucks. But like, there's so much connection available for you if you do talk, yep. and so much intimacy that can be created with like deep conversations.
And, you know, we know that talking about sex is one of the core features of maintaining sexual satisfaction. Mm-hmm. So forget about sexual compatibility, whatever that is. Forget about sexual frequency. Forget about orgasm frequency. None of these things actually matter when it comes to people that say they're sexually satisfied. What matters is they feel they can talk about it. So if you can improve that just a little bit, just by saying, hey, I listened to this Therapy Jeff podcast and it was all about how talking about sex is really important. I know that we don't do this very much. Let's start. And let's start by not talking about us. Let's start talking about sex scenes we see on TV, just so that we can get more comfortable talking about sex. And then let's look at talking about us. Because I don't know about you, but with this couple, she says, I'm using my words and I'm telling him that I want to have sex. But also, we don't know what she means by that. Is she initiating and he's turning her down? Or is she saying, you need to initiate? But perhaps that's not very sexy for him. You know, what else, what else does he need in order to feel sexy in the relationship?
Yeah, it might not be sexy and it might be received as really shaming, right? Which is only like shutting him down even more. Exactly.
Pressure.
Yes. Okay, I feel like I could talk to you forever, but we have run out of time. Can you tell people where they can find you? And can you talk about your books, especially the new book that's coming out?
Yes. So they can find me on Instagram at The Sex Doctor. And I have lots of stuff on there. I like to do some free resources. And I have a book called Mind the Gap, The Truth About Desire and How to Future-Proof Your Relationship. I had to think about that, which is all about the science of desire and long-term relationships and how to maintain it. And you can buy that anywhere you get your books. And I also have a new book coming out on the 4th of April in the UK. I'm not sure when it's coming out in the US, but shortly after, hopefully, which is called How Not to Let Having Kids Ruin Your Sex Life. I think it's called A Guide to the Parenting Year. No, I can't remember the rest of it. How Not to Let Having Kids Ruin Your Sex Life. And that is a book for parents about how to navigate the years of having children and not fall too far off course with your sex life.
Yeah, I need to read that book. I'm really excited for it because I have so many couples now that are parents that are struggling with that question. It's a, and I feel like I feel pretty confident about saying that like close to 100% of parents that have new, like have kids, like their sex life is affected in usually a pretty major way. So this feels like a really important book for all of them.
Yeah, it's the number one time for sexual dissatisfaction, having kids under five at home. So if anyone's listening to that, you're normal.
Yeah, and more reason to not have kids, I guess.
Yeah, it's a good reason.
Yeah, I'm really excited to not have kids. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. I hope that you can come back soon and we can do this all over again.
I would love to. Thanks so much. Did he say?